1 o'clock, and today is Wednesday, December 10th, 2025. We're ready to begin our work session. We are in the Sevier School District Board Office, District Office, and those in attendance are Jill Porter, Vice President Ryan Savage, Jack Hansen, myself, John Foster. Rick Orr is asked to be excused today. And from the administration, we have Superintendent Dr. Kate Douglas, Assistant Superintendent Mike Wallace, Business Administrator Chad Lloyd, and Executive Secretary Kristen Nielsen. Who wants to start off what we're doing with our work session?
Chad.
Yeah, that's me. Yeah. Okay, it's just the time of year that I need to present the audit to you. It's a yearly requirement after our audit's finished that it's presented to the board. Normally, well, I think the last couple of years we haven't printed physical copies of the financial statement for you, or the state's similar reports, the annual program report or the annual financial report that we give to the State Board of Education. If you want copies of those, let me know, and we can get you hard copies or print or an email copy, whatever you'd like. The financial statement, just although you don't have a hard copy in front of you, it is completed. Here's the electronic copy right here. It's been submitted to the state and to the state auditor's office. I'll go ahead and just jump into the audit presentation. If at any time you have questions or want me to elaborate on anything or you want to discuss something that's different, just let me know and I'm happy to adjust and answer whatever you'd like answered. Let me see if I can jump here to the slideshow. So just to start off, our audit went great as usual. We have a pretty good record here of not having any findings. The auditor doesn't have to come in and make adjustments and change our books or our numbers because they're inaccurate. We have a great accounting staff here between Carrie and Jody and Allison and Krista and everybody that helps out. Everybody does does a good job all the way down to the school secretaries that are doing the, you know, taking care of finances at the school level. We received an unmodified opinion, which is exactly what you're looking for on an audit. That means they're able to come in and say nothing needed to be changed, and the financial statements are materially correct. We had no findings related to internal control weaknesses. We had no findings in relation to federal programs. We did not have any audit adjustments. We had no findings related to state compliance, although we did have what the auditor calls as an other matter noted related to reporting leave to the Utah retirement systems. Apparently when somebody is on an extended leave, Carrie's still looking into this to figure out what the amount of time is on that, but we're thinking it's like a week or more. So to come into play if somebody's on maternity leave, usually we have to report that to the URS, and that hadn't been getting done at least in the last year. So although it's not a finding, it will be reported to the state auditor as another matter, and I'll probably have to explain to them that why we weren't doing that. But not a huge issue, like I said, because the auditor didn't report it as a finding. So the auditor noted no difficulties during the audit, no disagreements or misstatements, like I think I've already mentioned. And just thanks to the staff. Everybody that helps out with the year-to-year operations and managing programs. Looks like I still have Kathy's name on here, and she was here for most of the year, so I'll be changing that name next year. But it's really all the staff managing their programs and that make these things, these work, and the reason that we don't have a finding, the reason we have a clean audit every year. So when you jump into the audit, just some key highlights, like large scale overview, kind of big things pointed out during the audit. Right off the bat, the audit talks about daily enrollment. Enrollment drives our revenue. That's obviously the biggest factor of how we receive our revenue is through enrollment. Daily enrollment decreased by 69 students in 2025 compared to 24. So there was a decrease in K-12 revenues. One thing I noted is since our 10-year peak back in FY18, so basically since 2018, we're down 145 students. We hit a peak then, and then during COVID we dropped significantly and then kind of bounced back, and now we're back down that total of 145 students since that peak. In the current year, nothing is getting better with enrollment. So our latest October count, we decreased another 177 students. The incoming kindergarten classes from 2025 through the next few years are 70 to 80 students less than normal. So you'll see over the next, unless something changes drastically with in-migration, we expect to continue to decrease students by at least 70 to 80 each year. And if the outgoing class of seniors happen to be a significantly big class, then you could see decreased enrollment of, into the 100s per year, kind of like this year of 177 students down. So those things aren't easy to work through. We have great staffing meetings every year where we try to hold to our staffing ratios and do the right thing and work, put people where they need to be so that we're not having to go through a riff or lose employees unnecessarily. But be aware, over the next few years, there's going to be significant decreases in enrollment. Unless, like I said, something changes and we magically have a bunch of families move in with lots of kids. Another just high-level thing, and I'll talk a little bit more about this as we get into the fund financial statements, but salary and benefits continues to be that's the driving expense of a school district. It's currently 83.3% of our general fund expense, so doesn't leave a lot of money left over for other things when you fund, when your main expense is people. One thing that's been giving us some extreme flexibility over the last few years, this chart is just kind of hilarious to me, that steep incline from 2022 to 25 is our interest earnings. On a typical year prior to 2022, we would have $500,000 to $1 million worth of interest earnings. Even $1 million was high. That's usually if we had issued a bond and we had excess cash before the construction costs had spent down that cash. So really, $500,000 to $700,000 is kind of what I would say would be an average interest earnings. But over the last several years, you can see in FY25 we earned $4.3 million. $4.3 million in FY24. And FY26 will be no different. I'm sure we'll earn upwards of $4 million again. It's created some flexibility because that's not money that we would budget expenses against. It's not like we would start up a program or hire people based on interest earnings. If I don't mention this later on, we did transfer $4 million of interest earnings in FY25 from the general fund over to the capital fund. So it's helping essentially fund the projects that we're undergoing right now.
Imagine one little thing on that. It's interesting, a little bit frustrating at the legislative level. So, your district, which typically, you know, we're a smaller district of the 41, they're looking at this across the board, this is such a blessing, like, for school districts to take advantage of the economy and the interest rates. The reason it's doing so well is because the interest rates have significantly increased. That, to me, the number one variable. But it's also an opportunity for us because we have funds that we specifically allocated for debt service, for funds that are they're there to pay off, like, our bonds and things like that. But legislative leadership is looking at this as a negative. I think they're looking at it saying, well, how come school districts and public entities have all this money? You know, why aren't they spending their money? Well, we have a really good explanation, every one of us. Those funds, they are at work. They're already allocated. They have a need. But any good family or business or public entity would take advantage of interest, and it's been a tremendous blessing. It's a good thing. But it's not necessarily the interest they're looking at specifically. They're just looking at all those funds that are in that PTIB, that's called the PTIB account.
Yeah, they're looking at the cash balances and the interest, which obviously coincide.
It's the same thing. But it has been a little frustrating trying to explain, isn't this exactly what you do as a legislature as well? You take advantage of, you allocate the funds and you put the funds to use. But I think you're kind of looking at it a little bit narrow-minded. That, yeah, of course, as allocated, their funds are allocated, we're expending those. Every dollar has a purpose. But any good budgeter would try to take advantage of interest rates and let those dollars work. So, I mean, looking at that, we knew it would be a blessing. You can see it has always been a blessing since 2015-16, but it's been a tremendous blessing the last 4 or 5 years, and why not? It's helped us so much. It's actually helps taxpayers, not burden them. So just so you know, it's kind of a hot topic up there. Pretty difficult to navigate.
Yeah, I think it'll be a big topic during the session. I think there's some behind-the-scenes pressures to legislators from the banking industry. Certain banks in our state wondering why all that cash isn't being deposited with them and instead being held in the PTIF, because they want to be the ones generating that interest. But, I mean, PTIF is standard practice that you invest your money with the state treasurer. But we'll see what comes of it. Just continuing on into financial statements, from a government-wide standpoint, which is all of our funds combined, we have a total net position of $117 million. That increased from $107 million over the course of the year. Along with that previous conversation about cash balances and interest, this is another thing that the state auditor was focusing in on when they've been looking at these things, is why everybody's net position has been increasing so much over the last several years. And it's, from an accounting standpoint, it's kind of nonsensical, the things that they were asking, because they're asking why your net position increased, even though they know everybody's has been building buildings and been increasing interest revenues. These things all increase your net fund balance or your net position. If you go out and build a building in the business world, that might, or go buy equipment, those things might decrease your overall operating fund balance in the business world, but in a government world, that actually increases your net position, and you would think that the state auditor would understand that, but apparently they don't. Some of the reasons for this increase over the last year, some of the things making up that $117 million of net position, we have $44 million of investment in capital assets. So that would be the remaining investment, or the remaining capital assets on our book that haven't been depreciated yet. We have $7 million of money set aside for debt payments. We have $13 million set aside that's restricted for future capital outlay. That's essentially our fund balance and our capital fund. School nutrition has $1.5 million set aside that can only be spent on feeding children. And then we have $52 million of unrestricted resources. That balance has increased over the last several years. So over time, increases or decreases in that balance indicate, kind of give you a barometer on the financial health of an entity.
And is it those same funds that are helping translate into interest earnings? I mean, really?
Yeah. That $52 million of unrestricted funds kind of roughly equates to our cash balances that we have in PTIF, and that's what's driving the interest earnings.
There's one other comment. You're probably going to get to it, but there's, you know, employees or citizens that might say, man, that fund balance is so high, you know, $52 million unrestricted. We always have to remind them how expensive it is to run. You know, 85% of our expenses are in payroll. That wouldn't last very long. I just don't think people realize the monthly payroll and how quickly those funds would evaporate. So we're much better off than to have a healthy, strong. Chad will talk about it. He always analyzes that. But we're so much better off to have a healthy fund balance versus other districts that are just living on fumes. But that does get brought up. It seems like a lot of money. It is a lot of money, but it's not a lot of money when you realize 1% of payroll would take that. It would just evaporate those funds in a very short amount of time.
I'll talk a little bit more on that here in a few slides. General fund, that's our, when Carrie's given a budget, you'll hear her say the M&O fund, the maintenance and operation fund. That's our general fund. That's fund 10 as far as the state's concerned. But that's where everything, all the operations of the school district essentially happen within the general fund. When you think about instruction or transportation, a lot of our maintenance, most everything, 90% of our activity happens in the general fund. In that general fund this year, we reported $7 million in revenues over expenditures. Again, that seems like, wow, we brought in a lot of money. We had a big net income for the year, $7 million. $4 million of that is that interest revenue. That's just unaccounted for money that come in and increased revenues over expenditures. But like I mentioned, we took $4 million of that and transferred it over to the capital fund. After transfers, the net change in fund balance for the year was $1.4 million. So still a healthy increase, but kind of accounted for those unaccounted for revenues, like the interest earnings. That's a more realistic picture of where we're at on a budget basis year to year. About $1.4 million in the positive. Local property tax for the general fund increased by $282,000. This increase is due to assessed value increases, new growth, and then the state basic rate not being decreased as much as what some might think it needs to be. So we've collected more in property taxes over the last year, even though we didn't raise our rates. Keep in mind, as we collect more in the general fund, that just means that the state sends us less money because we're essentially equalized by student. Investments, we've already talked about this a lot, but the interest earnings in the general fund was that $3.3 million. Overall, it was the $4 million. This is about $2 to $2.5 million over normal earnings, and that got transferred to the capital fund. Federal funding was up about $525,000 as compared to the prior year. I meant to dig into the lab a little bit, and then Carrie has today off, so I wasn't able to ask her about it, but I'm not 100% sure right now without digging into it a little more why our federal funding was up so much. I know over the last few years we've dropped in federal funding because of all of the COVID money we got, but then this year we took a little bit of a bump, so.
Would the grant go into that?
We haven't received any new grants. So.
The last 5 years.
The only thing I can think is that there's just some accounting there where we've had deferred money that had to be, that was spent. I'll ask Carrie and follow up. General fund continues to be strong. High interest earnings are driving the increases in fund balance and allowing for flexibility of future capital needs. State revenues continue to increase, even though our enrollment is shrinking. So, yeah, we're decreasing in state enrollment, but the state has continued to fund. We've seen high increases in the WPU over the last several years. There's been added money for security needs, technology needs, capital needs. The state has continued to increase funding, and even though statewide enrollment is decreasing, so I think every year we go to battle with the state, but I think we need to be giving them props. They're funding education. General on the expense, so that was kind of the revenue side of the general fund. On the expense side, general fund salaries expense increased by just over 7.9%. So that would include our negotiated increase. In 25, I think we were around a 5% negotiated increase, as well as new hires and new positions and retirements. All of the net effect of that meant that salaries increased by 7.9%.
Steps and lanes, probably.
Steps and lanes is a big part of that. Teachers, which are the bulk of our salary, get 2 to 4% on steps every year and lanes. General fund employee benefit, so the benefit side of that increased by 8.9% compared to the prior year. So same thing, just new employees, additional as payroll increases, the benefit side of that is going to increase as well. Maintenance and facilities, repairs and improvements expense increased by $3 million. Compared to that prior year. And most of that is due to, because keep in mind this is general fund, so it really has nothing to do with the big projects we have going on. That's paid for out of the capital fund. But we did spend an extra $3 million in the general fund, most of that on replacement of outside entrance doors at North and South Center High School, as well as secure entryway implementations and electronic locking systems at all of our schools. So we've been making significant investments in school safety, utilizing a lot of our own money as well as prior state money that's been given to us. But I think we're almost there on having electronic locking systems everywhere. It's nice. You can walk up to a school right now and use your phone and unlock a door and go in if you have access to that system. And then our secure entryways have been implemented almost everywhere now. We do have a safe entryway into every school, but almost everywhere has the storefront, nice entryway like you've seen a lot of our elementaries over the last several years. Just talk about salary and benefits again. It's 80% of our expense. I just like to say this every year. If we do a good job at managing payroll, it allows you flexibility to manage the other areas of the district. That's the number one thing a school district or a government has to get right is payroll expense. And what drives our payroll expense is our student-to-teacher ratio. We have a firm set student-to-teacher ratio that rolls into a staffing ratio for schools. And as long as we do that right every year, that means we're doing 85% of our budget really well. So it gives you flexibility to maybe make some misses in other areas, or you just need to do well on payroll. The two important processes are negotiations and staffing. And I think our district has a history. We've always taken those processes very, very seriously, and I think we do them well. This kind of goes into the discussion Cade was having about how much money we have, how long that can last, what's the right amount. Just so you're aware, and I've had this slide on here for several years, but there's different types of fund balance. And when we're talking about our rainy day fund, we're not talking about each types of these balances. We're really just talking about our unassigned fund balance. Every government has these other kinds of fund balance. You have non-spendable, restricted fund balance that's really restricted by contract or by statute. We have committed fund balances. We have assigned fund balances. These are monies that we set aside every year that we know we're going to be spent on certain obligations. And then unassigned is kind of, if it doesn't meet any of the other criteria, then it's unassigned fund balance. And that's really what the state's looking at, what our teachers might look at during negotiations and say, hey, you've got all this rainy day fund. That's the amount of money we're talking about. In our general fund, as far as those different types of fund balances go, we had a committed fund balance of $5.8 million. We have a signed fund balance of $27 million. That's set aside for employee compensation, Medicaid. It's our board and voted leeway, tax collections. Transportation, we set aside about $1 million there for bus purchases. And then we have a little bit of money from those vape lawsuits sitting there. Once we collect all that money, we'll figure out how to spend. Unassigned fund balance went up to $22 million from $21 million in fiscal year 24. So that's that $1 million increase I talked about just a little bit ago. What's the right amount? Going back to the superintendent's conversation a minute ago, that's a question every governmental entity needs to kind of answer for themselves. I think a good rule of thumb you should have 25% of your yearly expense set aside as unassigned fund balance. That's pretty standard throughout governments. We have 41%. So we are, there's no doubt we're on the healthy side. When the state auditor's looking at these things, I sure we're on the end of things that they look at and go, wow, these guys have excess cash in the bank. There's reasons for that and justifications for that. The government finance office actually says you should carry higher than standard if you have economic uncertainty, which we do. We've had years, just even in the recent past, where we've had certain taxpayers file appeals or question their tax, and all of a sudden our assessed value has dropped significantly. Those are economic uncertainties that when we have higher fund balance, we're able to ride out, and it doesn't really impact us. Immediate capital needs is a reason to have higher fund balance. We have those. Right now we're funding millions of dollars of projects without having to go to the taxpayers and ask for money. Every one of these projects that we're doing right now, we have not increased our tax rate at all, and yet we're being able to get them done. Impact on bond ratings, we currently have the highest bond rating severe school districts ever had. That was increased about 3 years ago, and we got a low interest rate on our bond because of that. And when we refinanced our Richfield High bond, we got a great interest rate. In fact, we got such a great interest rate on our South Silver Middle School bond that I doubt we'll ever be able to refinance that. It's a 20-year bond. Usually, governments refinance. You're always refinancing those things about year 10. I don't think we'll be able to refinance it because our original rate was amazing.
You know the term you used at the very beginning? I can't remember the term, but it was the amount that had increased so much. That first slide, it was our total value.
Our net position?
Yeah. Doesn't net position help significantly with your bond rating? I mean, don't they look at that kind of
yeah.
thing?
Yeah. Yeah, net position, fund
that's
balance.
That's what helped us. Yeah. So that's another thing that's kind of contradictory to the legislature being frustrated with us. When you're in good standing, you have better credit. It's just interesting that they question that.
These are the exact types of things, like on the survey they send out. These are the exact same, these are the things that I'm telling them when they're saying, why do you have a fund balance or net position that's so high? It's because of these things. It's a benefit. It's not a negative. One thing to keep in mind, this kind of goes back to the previous comment from Superintendent as well, is really the difference between our high water mark of 41% and the 25% that most people think is reasonable is $8.7 million. So if we all of a sudden went out and wrote a check and bought something for $8.7 million, we'd be down to that 25% level. But realistically, if we had an economic downturn, that $8 million would be gone in the course of two or three months just with payroll.
Disappear.
It's not, I know that's a lot of money to all of us individually. But from a business standpoint, where we have $60 million a year in expense, $8 million isn't a ton. I'm kind of beat a dead horse on this, but just one last line from the government finance office: when you have excess fund balance, they just say in all cases the use of those funds should never be spent on ongoing reoccurring expenditures. So you might get in a situation like us where we have some excess fund balance. That doesn't mean you should turn around and increase salaries or add new positions, because that's your piggy bank. Once that money's gone, it's gone. It is smart to use it on one-time expenses like capital needs, and that's what we're doing. Moving on to our debt fund, so that's kind of, we've talked about the general fund, how healthy it is. Just moving on to the debt fund real quick. Our fund balance actually decreased a little bit. This is strategic. From $2,070,000 to $2,069,000. So basically, we just held steady. We've been trying to not increase that fund balance because you really only need in that fund what you need to make your debt payment. And if it starts getting too large, you get people asking questions why you're collecting so much money in there. But every year we seem to over-collect what our tax rate is just from delinquent payments or the increased assessed value. This year we did pretty well, where we decreased just a little bit. The current year, our bond payments total $3.1 million. So you can see we've got fund balance about two-thirds of what we need to cover a year's worth of debt payment. Just kind of a chart on our debt structure. Our total, the blue graph represents our Rich Gold High Bond. The green bar represents our South Center Middle School bond. So you can see in 2018, it went back a few years prior to that, but 2018 we only had Richfield High debt. 2021 we issued the South Center Middle School debt, so those payments will continue until 2035 when the Richfield High bond drops off. Then we'll only have the South Center Middle School bond left. At that point, or a few years before that, and this lines up with our 10-year building plan as well, but there will need to be a decision made to what we do with this. Likely we'll be in need of a couple elementary schools that are on our list of not great buildings. We'll need to decide if we if we consider going to taxpayers and renewing a bond or going through truth in taxation and making up this rate so that we can fund the construction of probably Monroe Elementary School would be the number one school on the list that's kind of treading water right now and needs some capital improvement.
I don't know how they calculate this. I really don't, but I've heard several times. It's interesting because 2036 is when they see the birth rate will start to climb back up. I have no idea how they would calculate such a thing, but I've heard in several meetings I've been in that it'll decline all the way down to 2035 range and start to climb back up. I just have no idea how anybody would predict that, but they have been quite accurate in their birth rate decline, and I don't know how they predicted that either.
Moving on to our capital projects fund. This is the fund that is funding all of our current construction that's going on, our 10-year building plan. Our fund balance increased from $15 million to just over $16 million. A large part of that is because of the transfer of interest revenues over into the capital projects fund. This balance is restricted. It can only be spent on those certain things. It can be spent on debt, which we do have $4.9 million set aside for two other little bonds that pay off in 2027 and 28 related to old elementary school improvements. And then we have that $11.5 million set aside for capital improvement. So we've been able to hold that fund balance steady while completing these major projects, the shop and wrestling room, the locker rooms at South Sevier and North Sevier, the elementary playgrounds, and then now we're currently remodeling the auditorium at North Sevier High School. So we've been able to do that and not really spend down any of our balance. Just the other funds in our financial statement in the school district include the student activity fund, which is all the schools' money, mostly made up of student fees, school food service fund, and then the pass-through taxes fund. Fund balance in those funds combined decreased from $3.9 million to $3.4 million, and that's essentially all due to school food services fund balance decreasing by just over $500,000. A lot of that was expected just because we've been not reimbursing school food service for their indirect costs in order to pay back the construction of the new freezer. And the state was getting after us because we had too much fund balance in there. So Kathy had been increasing expenses in her time in order to spend down some fund balance, but Renee's going to have to figure out how to slow that decrease down. So it's good that the balance is decreasing, but at some point that decrease has to stop and you got to be able to stabilize. So she'll be working on food costs and staffing and trying to figure out how to slow that decrease down a little bit.
One quick question on food service. Do you remember, I talked about it a little bit on the radio, how it was legislated last year that the reduced lunch students now receive free lunch. Was that funded just 1 year at a time? It seems like it was. So we'll see how
I think so.
Did they fund us on that? So the state gave a one-time allocation to cover that.
Yeah, I think we submitted for, it was like $36,000.
Well, it wasn't a major thing then.
No. Okay. There's that population of kids on reduced lunch isn't very big. I don't think we took a pretty big broad guess on that. I think we'll probably only get about $15,000. So we'll probably have to turn money back to the state at the end of the year. Just some other slides. We've got a few minutes. So that kind of covers all of our audit and how our funds are performing. I had a few other charts the auditor provided me with this morning that I thought I'd share with you all. They're fairly relevant. This just shows our district in comparison to several other districts around us, or that are at least comparable financially and student count, those types of things. So the first chart is just property tax revenues by fund. You can see how we compare to these other districts. Really comparable, I'd say. Kind of the outlier here would be Duchesne. Duchesne's, I don't know why they are what they are, but they just seem to collect more taxes in their capital fund than they do others. Well, actually, I can't answer that question. I know why that is. It's because they've done what I mentioned just a few minutes ago. They've had debt drop off the books. Instead of waiting for a bond to come up, they've just asked, they've went through truth and taxation and raised their capital rate up so that they can essentially fund building projects forever through their normal tax rate without having to go through a bond process. There's several districts that operate that way. Duchesne appears to be the only one that amongst this comparison that's doing that, but that's one reason why their capital rate is higher than others. But we're right in the ballpark, it looks like to me, as far as especially like your general fund, how much taxes we're collecting in our general fund compared to the other surrounding districts and counties around us. General fund expenditures by function. So this is just showing how much a school district is spending on instruction compared to support services. And you can see there's one weird little outlier, but I know they went through a bunch of construction over the last few years. So that's probably just they've spent a lot of fund balance on supporting services on construction. So as a percentage, it looks weird. But you can see we're right in the ballpark as far as the amount of money that we're spending that is getting to the instruction function, which is basically teachers, aides, anything, supplies spent on a classroom, anything in that 1,000 function, which is if it's tied to a classroom, it's a 1,000 function. So it looks like, I don't know, I'd say we're dead average. 63% is kind of the average there that districts are spending. Salary and benefits. You see we're the high one here, at least in this comparison, at 83%. If you were to look at statewide, I think 83% would be basically average statewide. Some of these districts are likely spending more money out of general fund on maintenance or transportation than we are. So that's lowering their percentage of salary and benefits would be my guess. My guess isn't that we're out of line. It's just these other districts are funding other projects in different ways than what we do. But looks like that was the last of those charts. Any questions on any of that? We've got about 10 minutes, 15 minutes before our next meeting starts, but I've covered what I need to. Unless there's any questions or anything that I can answer.
I don't have any questions. That's a great presentation. Thank you for explaining that all to us.
Okay, thank you.
I do have a question, though, is where we stand on our master board. Usually that has to be wrapped up in December. I wonder if we're missing some modules.
I checked. They sent out an email about a month ago, dug into it, and there were a few of us that didn't have all of them, but when I looked last night, it looked like we were all complete. So I think we did.
Yeah.
And that new system that allowed me to go in, and it's a little confusing because we're all in a little bit different places on that. Like on mine, I think I had 7 modules I did, but most board members, it was 3 or 4 modules. I think Mike ended up having 3 modules. But it looked like when I went back in, it looked like everyone was 100% complete.
Do I need to get in?
I don't know if he can see it. I can't see it. Because I can't get into the new system. I think he would have told you. Because we did it. You guys did it during...
I think we're good. So I'd be frustrated if we pulled it different than our January
trip. Was I good? Did I have it done?
I think so.
All right, I'm good.
I'll try to dive in and take a quick peek at it.
Yeah, John, that's all for this meeting. So if you want to adjourn, and then we can just have a break until 2.
Great. All right, I would entertain a motion that we adjourn this work session.
I'll make that motion, Mr. President.
Second. Been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. This meeting is adjourned.